This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 64. Good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is, folks. It's a show that focuses on everything to do with fantasy books, whether it's epic fantasy or urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, grimdark, horror fantasy, you know, whatever it is. We try to do it here, and we bring you the best and brightest authors from all the various corners of the fantasy book world. That's my goal here to you, is to get that done. So we can kind of talk about all the kinds of awesome things that happen in fantasy books. As far as what I'm excited about right now, I'm excited because I launched Stolen Destiny, Book 4 in the Broken Throne Saga today. Launch days are always a bit stressful. I think I've talked about that in the past. Lots of things to do, lots of things to follow up on. And so I try to stay a little saner than usual on those days. But that said, it's out there. I urge you all to check out Book 4. And of course, the whole series is available. We'll actually be wrapping up in 3 weeks, getting Book 5, the final book in this series, out for you. And then the series will be complete. Broken Throne will be out there for everybody to enjoy in completion. So I hope that you can check it out, get a look at it over on Amazon. If you're in Kindle Unlimited, you can download it for free and add it to your library now. I also just got Cyber's Underground back from the editor, and I'm excited because his response to me was, it's the best of the trilogy and a great way to wrap up the series. So another series I'm closing out there. I'm about to send it to the narrator, the awesome Sarah Geis, so she can get started on working on the audiobook, which has been a joy to hear that story come to life that way. All versions of the book should be out sometime in October, so stay tuned for updates. As soon as I have a specific launch date for you, I will let you know. But as always, if you don't hear it here on the show, you can always find out more information about what I'm up to. You can check out my fan group over on Facebook, which is a great way to we talk about all kinds of fantasy things, fantasy books, not just mine, but lots of people's fantasy books and what I'm reading, what you're reading, all available over there at Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers. So if you search for that, you should be able to pop it up on Facebook and join the group. I'd love to have you come in and join the fun. You can also find out more on my website and blog at jamiedavisbooks.com. And of course, I have a regular author Facebook page, which is also found under Jamie Davis Books. Okay, let's go ahead and get into this episode's special guest. Jack Connor is on the show, and he probably wrote the shortest author bio of anyone I've ever had so far on the podcast. I mean, literally, it was like one sentence. He says, in his bio, he says, he writes fantasy, sci-fi, and horror, sometimes all at the same time, and he lives in Austin, Texas. Yep, that's it. And you'd think there wouldn't be much to this guy, but believe me, there's a whole lot more behind this fantastic author than just that. And we talk about it, including his groundbreaking Atomic Sea series, which I really enjoyed. It has elements in it of iconic authors in the fantasy world, as well as bringing his own twist into the story, where you have stories that link things from Jules Verne and H.P. Lovecraft together. You know it's going to be gangbusters. So check it out. Here's my chat with Jack coming right up. Jack, I just want to welcome you to the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. It's great to have you here on the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Jamie. I'm really looking forward to it.
For those people who may not know who you are in the audience out there, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and your background and maybe a little bit about why you decided, hey, writing is for me.
Well, I've written books all my life. I started writing my first novel when I was 11 years old. I'm not saying it was a very good novel, but I did get an early start writing. And I probably finished my first novel in my early 20s. I didn't finish my first novel, but I did finish a novel finally. And, you know, I did not make a living doing it for a long time. I was a real estate agent and I did other things. And but I was, you know, always had this dream of writing. And for a long time, I actually was represented by a big time literary agency, a literary agent, the same guy that represents Brandon Sanderson and Charlaine Harris. And he represented me for about 10 years. But during this time, the Kindle gold rush was going on, and there were people just making a killing doing indie books. So I asked my agent, hey, you know, can I publish some of my backlist that you're not interested in? And he said no. And I dutifully sat on them, and I didn't publish them. But meanwhile, the Kindle gold rush was going on. So after a few years, I said, well, you know, if you're not interested in them, I'm going to publish them under, you know, another name, and you won't be mad, you know, that the publishers won't be mad if we do get anything published, because there is a stigma about indie publishing even today. And so that's what I did, but he was unhappy with that, and he dropped me as a client. And but by that time, I was making a living writing, doing what I loved, writing what I loved. And, you know, I'm just very glad that I did that, because after 10 years, I was not published with him. And, I, you know, another 10 years, I may still not have been published with him. So now I'm making a living writing and just loving it.
And that's fantastic. And, you know, I have to tell you, you know, who doesn't have a stigma about indie writers? My banker.
So, right, yeah. Exactly.
So,
exactly.
I mean, you know, I have nothing against anybody publishing any way they want. If they want to publish by handwriting it on the inside of a cereal box and putting it out there on a, you know, telephone pole, that's fine. I mean, however people want to publish is okay by me. I think we all have plenty of space, and there's plenty of room for all the readers to find our stuff. So I'm happy that you're an indie writer and right here on the show. And we've got a lot to talk about, because you've got a lot of books.
Well, I sure do. I have been busy, I tell you that.
So tell us a little bit about what your first, like you said, you finished your first novel, and you had this backlist that you wanted to publish while you were working on getting some other things in the works traditionally. Did you just kind of bring all your backlist out and throw it out there all at once? Or how did you kind of come about that process?
Yeah, no, I experimented for a while. I put a few things out there, and, you know, I didn't know what to do. I had not participated in the Kindle Gold Rush, and I didn't know how to do it. And so I put a few things out there. Nothing happened. So I read books about it. There's a whole bunch of how-to books about how to promote yourself. And so I read a whole bunch of those. A lot of them contradict each other, and you have to do a lot of experimenting to see what works for you. And I did a lot of things wrong, and, you know, just floundered around for a while, but finally caught on and was able to do it right. And, there are people out there doing it much better than I am. So I am by no means an expert or even particularly good at it by the standards of people that are doing, you know, running around in Rolls Royces all the time, but I'm doing well enough. And, but it took me a while to get there. And, but so no, I didn't just roll it out all at once. I put out one thing, and then I put out another thing, and I saw how one thing worked and how another thing worked. And if I did this with a certain promotion, you know, it would do X amount. And if I did with another promotion, it would do Y amount. And, you know, meanwhile, I was building up my newsletter list, and I was learning the promotion sites and getting better cover artists and learning how to write my descriptions better. And, you know, all that stuff.
All that. Yeah. It's funny. You know, it is funny what you said about the, you know, you read one book and it says to do one thing, and you read another book, it says to do another thing. And I've said this a million times on this podcast when I talk to writers, because there is no one way to do this. There's no one way to write a book. There's no one way to edit a book. There's no one way to promote a book. It really depends on the individual, because we all bring our own strengths and weaknesses to the table. And I'm interested, because you said you were a real estate agent for a while. That's a very outgoing career for a profession of writer, where most of the writers that I know are very much introverts. Now, I'm not, but I know there's a lot of extrovert writers out there, but introverts seem to abound in this profession.
Yeah, no, you know, the old joke is, you know, how can you tell if a writer is extroverted? Because he looks at the other person's shoes when he's talking.
That's great.
You know, that's very true. You know, a lot of writers are like that. And, you know, I'm not like that. I'm a pretty extroverted person. I think my friends will tell you that I'm pretty social and gregarious. You know, at the same time, paradoxically, I spend a lot of my time alone. I think that's just the life of a writer. And, you know, if you are making a living writing and you don't have to go to a day job, then that by definition means you're probably at home. You're not being social. So it's a weird thing to be an extroverted or at least a social writer, that paradoxically spends most of his time alone. And that was kind of a transition that I had to go through. When I wasn't going to work every day and I wasn't seeing people every day, my coworkers, how do you keep your sanity when you're I have a wife and I've got cats, so they help me stay a little sane, but, I had to be social. I had to be extroverted to have friendships and, to see people, to go out and do things. And, I think that was important to me. To hang on to my sanity when I wasn't seeing my coworkers every day, at least I still had buds to hang out with.
That's so important. And I mean, as an extrovert myself, I go through the same things. And I've found that, if I realize I haven't been out of the house for like 6 days, I'm like, okay, this is bad. I need to go and do something. Even if it's run to the store or, a new coffee shop opened up in town about a year ago. And, since then I've kind of made a habit of trying to get in there about once a week and I just sit down and work mm-hmm. for a couple of hours.
I think that's very important,
sit there, watch people go by, say hi to people. I know I live in a small town where everybody knows everybody. So it's a lot of looking up and nodding at them when they come in and they see me on the computer. So they generally leave me alone. But if they come over and talk, I'm okay with that. Because it's for me to be out around people in that time and it's good to get work done, but I need to, that's my people time. So I completely understand.
I mean, humans are social animals and I don't think I realized that until I didn't have to go to work every day and, how social I actually was. I always kind of thought I was more introverted and I didn't want to be around people so much. But when I wasn't around people, you start to get weird, you get a little twisted.
I think that's a great way to put it. And it's interesting. I mean, to some extent, I think we surround ourselves with the relationships and their characters and things. I mean, I talk about my characters like they're people and sometimes friends of mine because I've gotten to know them that well. But they don't take the place of that physical one-on-one interaction with someone.
Definitely. I mean, your characters, they're just part of you. They're part of your soul and, they almost become, they take on a life of their own.
So let's talk a little bit about your book that you wanted me to chat about today. I mean, you got a bunch of them and we may be touching on some others, but you wanted me to start with Atomic Sea,
sure.
Which is the title book of the series, The Atomic Sea. And there are 9 books in this series. So that's what you meant when you said in the scope of Robert Jordan.
Yeah, I like to compare it to, I've had, readers compare it to a cross between Jules Verne and H.P. Lovecraft. But it's, neither of those writers wrote epic works, really. Jules Verne wrote standalone novels and H.P. Lovecraft wrote short stories. But The Atomic Sea is a big, sprawling, epic adventure. I don't want to be, too highfalutin. I don't want to build it up too much and say that it's worthy of Robert Jordan or Tolkien or somebody. But I do aspire to make it a big, epic work. And that is what I have tried to create with it. And I have recently finished up the series and I'm so, so happy to have finally wrapped it up after several years. So now I'm, talking to people about it and trying to get the word out that it's finished finally, and people can go and read it and, hopefully they'll enjoy it. It is a weird mashup of genres. It's fantasy, it's science fiction, horror, steampunk, dystopian, a little Lovecraftian elements here and there. It's a lot of influences and genres all put together. Readers seem to be liking it. So I had a lot of fun writing it, and I've written several spinoffs to it. And I hope readers enjoy it.
It is unlike anything I've ever read before. I've just started digging into it, and it's just caught me right away. You know, I think the description of Jules Verne, you know, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea kind of thing meets, you know, Lovecraft is a great way to describe it, because there are definitely horror elements in it. There's murder mystery elements that I'm already seeing cropping up. And on top of all of that, you have this immensely rich world that, you know, the seas are toxic, and the world itself is toxic. You can't go outside without wearing some kind of an environmental suit that looks like an old canvas deep sea diving outfit. I mean, how cool is that?
Now, it's important to know that that's only on the sea or along the shore. If you're inland, you don't have to wear a suit. And if you're living in a city along the shore, you can take a pollution pill and you can live without having to put on a big suit. So I don't want readers to think that everybody has to have a suit on. Definitely when you're on the sea, you have to protect yourself. The fumes coming off of the atomic sea are deadly and can mutate you if they don't kill you. And so can the sea. If you eat anything from the atomic sea, you can die or become mutated. And as you will see, as you read the story, if you continue, there's a lot of, I'm just going to say, fish people. There are fish people and squid people and all sorts of people that have taken on properties of the atomic sea and creatures from the atomic sea, because that is one of the side effects of eating unprocessed seafood from the atomic sea, is you become mutated. So the sea itself is, lightning rips off of it, it boils and it bubbles and it crackles. It's very mysterious, and it has been this way for 1,000 years before the events of the novel take place. And our heroes are, you know, nobody knows why the sea became the way that it has. It's a big mystery, and it has changed the fabric of the world. The whole world has had to adjust to this crazy sea. And as the events of the novel unfold, there is a big world war going on. And the instigator of this war, the industrial empire of Octung, O-C-T-U-N-G, like an octopus, is it has connections to the sea. And I don't want to give anything away, but the sea is driving the plot in a way. And that's why it's called the Atomic Sea. But a lot of the story does actually take place on land, but it is a world transformed.
Yeah, it's definitely a transformed world. And then thinking people are going to get caught up into it right away, because you know, I could, you know, at least in the beginning, you know, I can see that you give an homage to like Herman Melville in there in times.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
With, you got the whalers telling their fish stories around the table, mm-hmm. and you know, the legendary status that they have for some of their old timers who've lived through so many whaling trips. And
Jenks, the whaler, the noseless whaler, he becomes one of the main characters going forward.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward. Like I said, I just started it, but it's just amazing. And the characters are rich and different in themselves. I mean, Dr. Avery, you know, has a past that's dark, that overshadows his life, you know, and he's struggling with that. You've got Jenks, you've got, you know, a character without a nose who wears a leather patch over the hole in his face. I mean, just like an eye patch, but a nose patch. I never even heard of such a thing. That's so cool.
Yeah, no, I love Jenks. He's one of my favorite characters, and he's a lot of fun to write. He's kind of the Conan of the seas, if you will. This rogue adventurer that's done everything and been everything and had all these adventures. And as the novel starts, he's a whaler with the country of Ganesa, and they have military whaling ships, because whaling is so important defending themselves against Octung, because of the hot lard of the whales. And the hot lard, you know, the semi-radioactive, extra-dimensionally radioactive hot lard of the whales can be used in the machines that protect Ganesa, which is the main country that our characters are from, against the ravages of Octung. And so wailing is very important, and that is where Jinx is in the beginning of the story. And Dr. Avery, Dr. Francis Avery, who is our main character, is a doctor aboard the whaling ship. When all of a sudden, through one of the whaling hunts, something mysterious is found in the mouth of a whale. And these whales, by the way, are not regular whales. Like everything else in the atomic sea, they're mutated and strange. And these particular whales are hostile. They've got cancerous growths on them. They got tendrils. They've got blind eyes. They're horrors. And, you know, true monstrous leviathans of the atomic sea. And so Jinx helps kill one of these whales. And in its mouth is a beautiful woman. And she is taken from the mouth of the whale and brought aboard the ship. And she has not been altered by the sea. She is a mystery, because anybody, as we've been talking about, that comes into contact with the sea is mutated and strange or killed by the sea. And she's just fine, and she is comatose at the moment. And so the doctor has to nurse her back to health. And as he does, he uncovers her mystery, and she's connected with the sea and also with Octum, and only she knows how to stop Octum. But only if Avery, Dr. Avery, can help her. But to do that, he's also going to need Jinx's help and some others, and they find themselves on a big epic adventure.
It's awesome. It's awesome. I'm just curious, you know, the world is so unique. Did this story come to you as like, I have this vision for this world with this problem that needs to be solved? Or did you, you know, because this definitely seems like the world is the main character almost.
Oh, it definitely is. And, you know, the big adventure that the characters go on is, I think it's a fun plot and, you know, got great characters. It's definitely a way to explore the world. And, you know, because we see many different parts of the world through their adventures. And we see the mutated, crazy atomic jungles, and you know the icy lands of the Arctic, and the crazy empires that have developed on the land because of this changed world and everything. And it's a very fun world to as a writer for me to explore, and hopefully as a reader as well. But if you're asking about the inspiration for the atomic sea. Actually it came to me in a flash. I will say I was writing a comic book, and I was writing it. I'm a big fan of Hellboy and Mike Mignola, and I was writing this comic book in the style of Mike Mignola. And, I had finished, the first six issues of this comic book that actually never went anywhere. It's still sitting on my hard drive. But I was thinking about the sequel. And all of a sudden, this flash came to me of this Mike Mignola style panel, you know, something he never drew, but something that he could have, which was sailors in these antique diving uniforms on the bow of a ship with lightning coming off the water. And I just thought that was such a great visual, a Mike Mignola style visual. And, that maybe that could be the subject of my next comic book. And then as I started to think about it and think about the world and the characters, the more I knew I had to write it as a novel. And you know, I actually thought about it for a few years as I developed this idea and this world and those characters. And eventually it worked its way into a novel and a series of novels. But it all started from that one burst of inspiration. And then there's, of course, a fusion of other inspirations, you know, from Lovecraft, Lord of the Rings, to, you know, Melville and Jules Verne and everyone else.
No, it's awesome. And I have to say, the idea of being inspired by a visual cue very much appeals to me. It's something that I often... I find inspiration from different types of artwork that I find around either on, you know, I love surfing through Pinterest and doing some random searches for fantasy elements and just kind of seeing what pops up.
Well, there's a lot of crazy stuff out there.
Yeah.
Great art, great ideas.
Yeah. And so it's just interesting because, I mean, I actually, I'm that guy that gets my covers done. Like if I know I'm going to write a series, I usually write in trilogy arcs, even though the series might be longer than that. But so I'll get the first three.
A trilogy is a very smart way to do it.
Yeah. And I get the first three covers done ahead of time. Because I just, you know, I get, go to my cover designer, say, I need three covers. You know, when can you get them done? What's on the schedule? Get on the schedule. We do all three covers at once. It's easier for him because he's got the, you know, the scheme of the layout in his mind for the series and that template kind of in place so that he can easily move from cover to cover. And what happens is invariably my cover designer puts something on that cover that inspires some part of the book that hadn't been written yet. You know, something in his vision of the artwork that I tell him about, that I say, the story's about this. And then he comes up with something that adds into that story. And so it's just very, very much akin to me, your story of, you know, this image inspired you.
Yeah, well, it wasn't even a real image. It was an image that I invented, you know, just it seemed like something that Mike Mignola would draw. And it was, you know, just creating things that were in his style and in his vein, because that was what was inspiring me at the moment. But I love your idea of doing three covers at a time and of having almost kind of a little collaboration with the artist in a way, because, you know, he helps inspire you and you help inspire him. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it's my jam. I don't know a lot of people that do it that way, but I found that, you know, plus having the cover, when I'm writing a book, I love being able to put the cover on my phone and on my tablet and on my laptop background. So everywhere right. I go, the cover's yeah. staring at me. And
that's awesome.
You know, usually it's the main character and just, you know, I can think about what they're going to do next. So that's what keeps me writing. I you know, that's a challenge. I know a lot of people, I mean, you seem to write pretty, you know, prolifically, but it's a challenge sometimes to think about what the next thing is and the words that are going to come next in the story.
No, it really is. I just finished The Atomic Sea, and I've got a couple of horror novels that are going to come out that are spinoffs to my horror series, The Living Night. The first book in that series is Vampire Nights with a K. And so I've got a spinoff to that coming out in the near future, but I'm developing my next epic fantasy series. And I love your idea of having the three covers done at once. I might have to do that. But yeah, I'm totally developing a more traditional Tolkien inspired epic fantasy series. That's actually kind of a continuation or a spinoff of my Shadow of the Black Lamb series.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking at your author page now and seeing Vampire Knights. I see War of the Black Tower, Flames of the Black Tower. You've got a lot of great looking books, and just I love how you kind of go and write in, across several related genres, because I don't think they're separate as people think they are. I think a lot of people read across all these genres.
Yeah, well, I like to, you know, I like to have fun with one genre and then move on to the next and then, you know, go back and forth. And, you know, The Atomic Sea is great because it has so many genres in it. It's got everything I love all in one place. But I love high fantasy and, you know, Tolkien-esque epic fantasy. And I love horror and, you know, action and adventure and sword and sorcery and all that kind of stuff.
So you said you're working on the more in the Vampire Knights series next. Is that your next project?
Yeah, that's right. I've got it's called Island Gods. There's a two-parter called Island Gods and Island War. And it's a spinoff series that takes place after the events of The Living Night. And there's one of the supporting characters in The Living Night series is a retired vampire slayer named Harry Lavaca. And he and his werewolf girlfriend, Cloyer, who was an assassin, and she worked for a vampire mob boss. Well, Harry is a good guy. He went out and he killed evil creatures, but he's retired now. And she was an evil creature. And she is going through a process of trying to not be evil anymore. And they're trying to make their relationship work. And they have retired to an island only to discover a bunch of crazy supernatural stuff going on there. And they get involved in that while they're going through their own issues.
When are you thinking that's going to be out? I mean, I know you just released the last book in the Atomic Sea series, War of the Abyss, came out earlier this spring, correct?
That's right. That's right. And I will probably make that available for pre-order very soon. It'll probably be a 2 or 3 month pre-order. And I've already got the cover made. And so that's coming soon, very soon.
So, you know, you're an extrovert, I'm an extrovert. So let's talk a little bit about meeting our readers and how we interact with them, because, you know, this podcast is for readers as well. And we want to make sure that they get a chance to know how to best talk to us. So how do you like getting in touch with readers?
Well, I do a lot of Facebook stuff. I probably spend way too much time on Facebook, you know, just as a product of, you know, not getting out very much, honestly. And so, you know, a lot of my social interactions is on Facebook. And so please look me up on Facebook. Just Jack Connor, E-R, on Facebook. Actually, that's not entirely true. Okay, let me tell you my actual Facebook. I think it's jack.connor.98, which is just a random
number. I'm looking at it right now, jack.connor.98. And we'll actually have a link to it, so you don't have to remember the exact thing, because I'll just tell them to go to the website and click on it. So,
okay, yeah. Cool.
But yeah, jack.connor.98 on Facebook is your site page, you know, there. So that's pretty cool. So, yeah, and do you ever get out to cons at all? Have you been to any public events where you've been able to meet fans face-to-face?
Yeah, I've been on a few panels. I was on a panel at WorldCon, Comic-Con here in Austin a couple of years ago, and I was on a panel on ArmadilloCon last year. And so I like to do panels. Panels are a lot of fun, and it's good to, you know, meet fans and be public. Do you do that a lot?
I do. I try to get to two events, public events a year. There's a local con that our local community college actually runs that Cool. we're out in the rural area, and I'm always surprised that they can pull in a Saturday con that brings in like 5,000 people. And so I get a table there and I sell books locally, and it's a couple other local authors in the dealer area there. Amidst all the other fantasy and manga stuff and everything else that's around us. And that's always a lot of fun. And then I go to one other major event a year. So, you know, I didn't go to Dragon Con this year. I'll probably go down to Atlanta for Dragon Con next year. But I try to get to at least one other event that's a little bit bigger than my local event. But I really do enjoy it.
What is Dragon Con like? I've never been there.
It's crazy. I mean, 100,000 people. You know, all converging in Atlanta,
really?
that are all into fantasy and sci-fi and, you know, everything to do with it. So, it's a huge, huge event, and, there's panels, there's so much to do. You really can't see it all. I mean, I think they just added another day to it. I think it's like 4.5 days long now. Something like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe I do need to get to that. That sounds like a blast.
Yeah, it's actually going on. It actually just started. So it goes on Labor Day weekend. So it's going on right now.
Maybe next year. Yeah.
So, but you can.
Hey, I could hit the, you know, the plane in 2 hours and be there.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. I think I'm in Maryland. You're in Texas, I think. Right. So it's a good hop to go to Atlanta. It's a nice hub.
Yeah. Yeah. Atlanta's cool. Yeah. I'm in the Austin area, which is a fun town.
Well, yeah, and it's also a kind of a writer's hub too, because I know a ton of writers and other art people that live in the Austin area. They really seem to gravitate to that part of the state.
Oh yeah, I've got a lot of writer friends, and you know, we all hang out and we have you know, get-togethers monthly, or you know, I belong to a writer's group and called the Slug Tribe. And we get together twice a month. And so, yeah, a lot of my friends are writers, and we all hang out. And there's a good community here for genre writers, science fiction and fantasy and horror writers.
Awesome. Well, Jack, I want to thank you for coming on the show. And, you know, we'd love to have you back in the future if you have a project you'd like to come on and talk about some more. And we'd love to have you back. So please let us know, and we'll have you back another time.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, Jamie. I've had a lot of fun.
And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us online for a whole lot more from the Fantasy Focus community. That's over on Facebook. Just search for Fantasy Focus or over at fantasy-focus.com. Leave a comment there on this episode right at the top of fantasy-focus.com. You'll see the podcast tab. Click that and you'll find all of our episodes, and you can leave comments on any of them. Let me know what you thought of the show, or maybe if you have a question for the author, I can have them come back and answer your question right there on the Fantasy Focus site. Also on the website, on each podcast episode post, there are links to subscribe to the show, so get the show automatically delivered and notified to you on whatever your device is, iOS or Android, in apps like Stitcher or TuneIn. You can even find out by email, but get over there and subscribe. You don't want to miss any episodes. There's some great authors coming up. The next episode includes a chat with the amazing Catherine L. Hudson, which I really enjoyed. So you should definitely tune back in for the next episode. That's it for this show, though. The Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast wraps up for this episode. And as always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis. I'm the author of what I like to call Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook, either on my Facebook page at Jamie Davis Books or in my Facebook group where we talk about all things fantasy in Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers, and at my website, jamiedavisbooks.com. And if you want, you can head over to the website and get a free book to check out my writing. Just sign up for the newsletter and you'll get a link to download that ebook right away. Whatever you do, though, subscribe to this podcast. Come back and catch the next episode. And always, 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 don't forget, keep your eyes open out there, folks, because you may miss it. There's magic all around you.